out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 6th of February, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, just before we get into the news for today, just an addendum to what I was saying yesterday about the amount of black children that were involved in knife crime. The same news report that I used was actually elaborated upon in Breitbart later on yesterday. Now, when I was talking about this, I said, well, the only way we can actually find out the ethnicity of the people involved is by going back to 2010, and I've managed to find a report on Wikipedia. But apparently, at this same meeting where the statistics for the amount of children that were involved was talked about, a chief superintendent, Adi Adelekan, the head of the Met's violent crime task force, said that 73% of knife offenders and 53% of the victims were all from a black or ethnic minority background. And that's pretty good guess on my part, I think, because I suggested that if the actual figures were released, they would probably show that 75 to 90% of the offenders were black or minority ethnic, and the actual figures are 73, so it's pretty much 75%. So I was pretty accurate on that. When you think about it, that means that three quarters of all the knife crime that's happening in the capital today is being carried out by people that came to the country within the last 50 years. Three quarters of the violent knife crime is being carried out by people that we welcomed into our country, that the traitors in government brought in, telling us that diversity was going to be a strength and what a wonderful addition to the country these people would be, how they would pay for all the pensions and would be doing all the work in the hospitals. And in actual fact, they're basically doing 75% of all the stabbings in the capital. And you imagine if they weren't there, we would only have a quarter of the knife crime that we do. And we probably wouldn't even have that, because the other 25% that's being carried out by white people, that's only being carried out by them because the blacks started doing it. There was never a problem with knife crime before there was immigration. So we probably wouldn't even have that 25%. You think of all the resources that are wasted on that, basically wasted on people that shouldn't even be here, that claim they have a right to be here just because they happen to be born here or because they came over in a boat. They didn't build the country. They're not responsible for investing in the country in any way. None of them ever sacrifice like our ancestors did to build the civilization that we have here. They claim to be British just because they were born here. Well, it doesn't make you a horse if you are born in a barn. Your identity comes from your ancestors. Your identity comes from shared blood. It's your family that you belong to. That's your essential identity, not what part of the world you happen to be born in. I mean, that's just a ridiculous way of doing things. And I think more and more people are waking up to that fact. More and more people have got the common sense to see that this is just a scam that's been put over on white people. You know, if a white man is born in China, it doesn't make him a Chinaman. If he's born in Japan, it doesn't make him Japanese. He will always be a white man. And if you're British, you will always be British. I mean, what does the word British mean? It means looks like Prince Brutus the Trojan. How can you say a Negro looks like Prince Brutus the Trojan? You can't. Okay, let's get into some of the news that I've got for us today. And this one concerns the Catholic Church. And I'm sure most listeners have probably seen the pictures by now of the Pope kissing an imam. Bear in mind that Christianity is supposed to be the truth and other religions are supposed to be false religions, according to Christianity. And yet here we have the head of the Catholic Church kissing a representative of Islam. I mean, that is just heretical for a start. Practitioners of Islam use interfaith dialogue as an intentional strategy to win the hearts and minds of professing Christians and to reaffirm the faith of questioning Muslims. The practice is called Dawah, and unsuspecting people happily engage in interfaith dialogue with Muslims, either ignorant of their tactics or self-assured in their own hubris, convinced of their inability to be succored. And that's what's going on here. It's this interfaith dialogue. That's what the Pope calls it. That's what the representatives of the Christian churches call it. Interfaith dialogue. And it's basically a way for Muslims to try and convert Christians, something that the Christians go out of their way not to do. They go out of the way not to try and convert members of these other religions. But that's the whole point of why the Muslims go to these dialogues. Dawah, it says here, is no conspiracy and is taught boldly as an Islamic evangelism. Although that term does not quite fit as an Islamic evangelism strategy of Muslims. And if you look up Dawah on Wikipedia, it tells you that it's issuing a summons. And a summons means that you are legally bound to go to the court. So what this is saying is that once you have had Dawah, you are legally bound to become a Muslim. If you don't become a Muslim, then you've been warned, and the Muslims have the right to carry out Allah's vengeance upon the kafir, upon the infidel. So it's not just an invitation or evangelism, it's a summons. From the Iman's online website, speaking of Dawah, it says, "This then constitutes the core and the essence of Islam. Other Abrahamic faiths will also find resonance in these core beliefs." And we'll just stop there, because this phrase, Abrahamic faiths, it is entirely Islamic. There was no mention of Abrahamic faiths 100 years ago. This is an Islamic term that tries to draw a comparison between Islam and Christianity, and it's a fraud. Islam doesn't come from Christianity. Islam has nothing to do with Christianity. Islam is a heresy. And the same with Judaism. Judaism has nothing to do with Christianity. Rabbinic Judaism came about 500 years after Christianity in response to it. The Pharisees, the descendants of the Pharisees, the Pharisaic Jews, decided to write up their teachings, which became the Talmud, and they then followed that. The Old Testament faith of the Hebrews, that revolved around sacrifices, the priesthood, and the temple. And all of those were done away with in Christ. Christ was the final part of the beliefs and the religion of the ancient Hebrews. Today's Jews are nothing to do with that. Today's Jews are the most anti-Christian people that there are, and their religion is anti-Christian. You only have to look through the Talmud to see that, where they boast of killing Christ. And they're even trying to make saying that the Jews killed Christ an anti-Semitic hate crime now, even though they boast of doing it in the Talmud. And of course, it says in our New Testament that they said, "His blood be upon us and upon our descendants." So they were quite proud of what they did. So to say that there is this Abrahamic faiths, as if these all, both Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, descend from Abraham, is a falsehood. Christianity was the faith of Abraham. Abraham's faith was that he was, from his loins there would proceed many nations and many kings. That was Abraham's faith, and his faith was so strong that he put Isaac on the altar to be sacrificed, because he knew that God would keep his promise to him that through Isaac he would have many nations that would descend from him, and many nations that would call him their father. And that was the European nations, the Christian nations, as it says in the New Testament, in Romans and elsewhere, that Abraham was our father. These other nations, these Arabs, Jews, they're bastards. They may have Abraham at some point in the past, in their past heritage, but their ancestors interbred with Negroes and Aborigines and all sorts. So they're mongrels. The word Arab itself means mongrel. It means mongrel race. The Jews are quite clearly mongrelized. They're not the lawful descendants of Abraham. So Abraham put his son on the altar with faith that his son was not going to be killed. Once he was put on that altar, he was sanctified to God, which meant that anything that came from his loins was also sanctified to God and owned by God. God's possession, God's possession was Israel. And the descendants of Jacob, Israel, became Christian. The mongrelized descendants of Judah, the ones that interbred with the Edomite Canaanites, that gave birth to Herod, who was the king at the time of Christ, who put all these Edomite Canaanites in the position of high priest and Pharisees and all the establishment, all of those were rejected by Christ. He told them that they were the sons of the devil, the sons of the master of lies, that they didn't have the same father. They were rejected by Christ. And those people that were rejected by Christ then formed Judaism as a response to Christianity. So there's no connection between them. There's no Abrahamic faiths. And then you get Islam, which came about in the 6th century. Muhammad's mother was a Jew. So by Jewish tradition, Muhammad was a Jew himself. And the Quran has many inconsistencies in it, and it's based on Jewish texts. It's based on what the Jews thought about Christianity. It has no respect for the creation of God, the creation of the different nations. It says in there it's perfectly fine for Muslims to breed with their slaves of the different races. It's perfectly fine to mongrelize. So it cannot possibly have come from God. It cannot possibly have come from Abraham, because it encourages mongrelization. The people that are preaching it are mongrels. So there's no link between the three. One way is the truth, and it was always taught as the only truth, Christianity, and the others have always traditionally been heathenish superstitions. And yet, somehow, this phrase Abrahamic faith has entered into our vernacular, and you even get nationalists using it. And it's a Muslim phrase. It's an Islamic phrase. It's an Islamic idea to draw a comparison between Islam and Christianity and Judaism, where there is no comparison. Nationalists should not be using that phrase, Abrahamic faith. It is basically in deference to Islam and spitting in the face of all European traditions of Christendom. Continuing with what the Imams Online website says about this, a true Muslim who loves God and the Messenger, peace be upon him, it says. Now, we shouldn't be saying peace be upon him. The New Testament tells us that if anyone comes to us bringing a different gospel to the one that Christ bore, even if it's been given to them by angels, we should curse them. And what does Muhammad claim to be doing? He claims to be giving us a new gospel brought to him by the angel Gabriel. Christians should be saying curses upon Muhammad when they mention Muhammad's name. Not peace be upon him, curses be upon him. He's led people astray. Yet I'm sure the Pope doesn't say that. He will be saying peace be upon him when he talks to these imams. A true Muslim who loves God and the Messenger and who knows salvation can only be achieved through devotion and good work, he is truly God-conscious. The God-bound and God-conscious soul feels a gentle urge to take the faith to others. The spirit of this witnessing is one of sharing, learning from others, and being a pilgrim with fellow believers. This invitation and giving good news is to be taken with the spirit of meeting fellow humans, both Muslim and non-Muslims. It is for building trust and mutual understanding and to remove stereotypes. The spirit of witnessing builds trust and brings people together to work for the common good. And that's what the Muslims think that they're doing when they go to this interfaith dialogue. They are seeking to convert the Christians. They're not seeking to find a way that we can all get along. They're seeking to convert the Christians. And they're quite open there that they call it giving the good news. And that's what the New Testament is the good news. This is a spurious gospel that's being preached by Muhammad. And none of the modern day establishment churches are brave enough to speak about it. Pope Francis, who as the Bishop of Rome views himself as the de facto representative of Christ on earth, landed in Abu Dhabi on Sunday for the first ever papal trip to the Arabian Peninsula. Do you think they have any churches in the Arabian Peninsula? It's just about one of the most anti-Christian places on earth. The purpose of the event was for the Pope to meet with Ahmed Al-Tayeb, the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar, for an interfaith dialogue to unite Roman Catholicism and Islam, to unite the two together. This is the same as what happened in Vatican II, where the Roman Catholic Church overturned 2,000 years worth of teaching on the Jews and claimed that the Jews were Christian's elder brother. See, this Abrahamic faith thing, it all ties it in together. It's this one world religion where other religions can all live alongside one another. And if you say that we can tolerate other religions, you're saying that none of them are actually true, because there is only one truth. If you say that different religions are all different paths to God, then you're saying that in actual fact, none of them are true. This is how insidious it is, this New World Order way of looking at religion. Francis is engaging in a conference on interreligious dialogue, sponsored by the Emirates-based Muslim Council of Elders, the purpose of which was to promote what is considered a more moderate brand of Islam. Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb is an imam of Sunni Islam and trains clerics and scholars from around the world. Prior to leaving for the United Arab Emirates, Francis did a video praising his friend and dear brother, Al-Tayeb, and congratulated him for calling the meeting to assert that God unites and doesn't divide. He said, "I am pleased with this meeting offered by the Lord to write on your dear land a new page in the history of relations among religions and confirm that we are brothers despite our differences." The supposedly moderate Al-Tayeb is on record calling for the death of any Muslim who leaves the Islamic faith for Christianity. The imam's desire to kill Christian converts came as recently as 2016. Unless people say, who really cares about whether Arabs convert to Christianity or not, or killed by other Arabs, that doesn't really matter. We now have a lot of white people that join Islam, that mistakenly join it. And then when they realize their mistake and they become Christian, a death sentence is pronounced upon them. And here's the Pope, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, cuddling up close to these people and this particular imam that has called for this. And he did this as recently as 2016. Al-Tayeb affirmed on his television show during the 2016 Ramadan celebration, "Contemporary apostasy presents itself in the guise of crimes, assaults, and grand treason, so we deal with it now as a crime that must be opposed and punished. Those learned in Islam and the imams of the four schools of jurisprudence consider apostasy a crime, and agree that the apostate must either renounce his apostasy or else be killed. And this is why we have these honor killings of Muslims that convert to Christianity. The Pope obviously thinks this is perfectly fine. Despite this imam being an enemy of the Christian Church, the Pope still refers to Al-Tayyib as his brother. Absolute madness. If you really want to find out about Christianity and the racial side of Christianity, check out Christoginia.org and learn about Christian identity. Okay, I've got another news story to get into today, and this comes from Britain, from a fairly rural area of Britain. It comes from Devon. A kind white Devon teenager who tried to help a man catch a bus back to London was left in tears after he sexually assaulted her. And of course, you can just guess what race the man was that tried to sexually assault her after she had helped him. Dan Wachira, 34, grabbed the 18-year-old and called her a cutie before trapping her on the bus, stroking her thigh and fondling her bottom. Now, any sensible white girl that listened to her instincts and listened to her intuition would not have allowed herself to be put into a position like this. And any responsible government would be warning white girls not to put themselves in a position like this. But we don't. We tell them that Negroes and non-whites are exactly the same as whites, and you've got nothing to fear from them. It's just a different skin colour. And that's just not true. You just look at the statistics. I mean, we heard about them yesterday. Three times as many blacks are involved in rape than their percentage of the population. And that cuts out a lot of the rapes that aren't actually reported. Africa is the rape capital of the world. Look at the Muslim rape gangs, and they're still not warning white girls about the risks that they face by going into these kebab shops. And white people, we feel concern for others. So when we see somebody who is apparently lost, we instinctively want to help them. This young white teenager, she instinctively wanted to help this Negro once she heard that he was lost and he sexually assaulted her. And she was put in that position by our government. She should never have been put in that position where her virtuous good nature could be taken advantage of like that. We look at these other races, we project our own character onto the other races, and they just take advantage of it. They don't think the same way that we do. They wouldn't be looking to help somebody out that looked like they were lost. They would be looking at ways to steal from them, ways to get one over on them, because they see somebody there that's weaker than they are. They don't look at life in the same way that we do. The Kenyan-born asylum seeker took advantage of the girl's kindness in order to sexually harass and try to wear down her defences, Exeter Crown Court was told. He told her, "No means yes to me." And this girl was very lucky that she wasn't actually raped. The victim said the incident had been so distressing that she had lost her confidence, given up her job, and moved away from the area. And I can well believe that. I mean, this is really shocking for somebody that has been brought up with the liberal worldview that everybody thinks the same as white people, and that if you treat them the way you would like to be treated, the world will be a better place. And that's, she suddenly had a rude awakening from that. She thought it was the right thing to go and help this Negro out, this stray Negro that she'd never met before. And this was her reward for it. I mean, it must have completely turned her world upside down to see that instead of being treated kindly by this Negro, that he just tried to sexually assault her after she had tried to help him. That's not the way we are taught that people think. Sentencing Wachira from Essex to a year in prison, Judge David Evans said, "You must have realised she was a polite young woman with the bus journey ahead of her, which she would have to take alone." Well, yes, and instead of thinking she needs protecting, which is what a white man would think, he just thought, well, this is my chance to sexually assault her. The judge continued, "You deliberately embarked on a prolonged course of sexual harassing behaviour, including sexual assault." Miss Katie Churcher, prosecuting, said the incident started at Exeter bus station at 1:30 p.m. Again, these things don't happen at night anymore. They happen in broad daylight in the middle of towns and cities. The victim was waiting for a bus when Wachira started chatting to her, telling her he was trying to get back to London. And she should have realised straight away that something was up. If a stray Negro comes up to you and starts chatting you up, she should have done her best to just get away from him, not give any signals that she was concerned for him. It may have been even best just to not to acknowledge him at all. She agreed to help him by finding out when his next bus would be. She spoke to the bus station office and told Wachira that there was no scheduled bus to the capital and he would have to book a ticket online. Wachira then started to pester the young woman, asking her to come with him to a hotel or stay in Exeter with him. And again, this is because they all think that white women are sluts. What they're used to, where they are used to seeing white women is in pornography. That's where they first see white women out in Africa. They see them in pornography. They latch onto that and they think, I want to go to a white country and have me some of that. And that's what this guy was obviously thinking. So again, this poor white girl is going to be really shocked at that, to think that that's the way that this Negro thinks. And then she's going to have all the feminists telling her that all men think like that. Not just Negroes, all men think like that. And that's all that men think about. So she's going to be damaged by that as well. This is another side of it. Even the white girls that aren't sexually assaulted by these Negroes in our country, but because of the way that they behave, they think that all men think like that. And then you get a decent, chivalrous white man who will do something innocent, like ask the girl if she needs some help or whatever, and he'll be snapped at by her, and he'll be treated as if he was making an advance at her. And of course, then that will harm his ego. And then he will be less likely to help girls out again. He'll be less likely to intervene if he sees a girl in trouble, which is what happened to this white girl. She got into trouble on the bus and nobody intervened. "He blocked her way and tried to prevent her walking away from him," said Miss Churcher. "When the teen asked for her lighter back, he grabbed her by the hand and pulled her towards him. He kept asking her to go with him for a drink, and she repeatedly said no," said the prosecutor. "He responded by calling her cutie and beautiful. When the girl's bus home arrived, she got on but was followed upstairs by Wachira. The defendant, a father of two, continued to tell the girl he loved her and begged her to stay with him, but she refused. She told Wachira she had a partner and was going back to her parents, but that didn't stop his advances," the court was told. "His pestering went on for about half an hour. Wachira was filmed on CCTV, whispering in the girl's ear, stroking her face, and putting his arms around her shoulder. She tried to speak artificially loudly so people on the bus might hear her distress, but nobody showed an interest." And why is it that nobody showed an interest? Because people are being taught that this is absolutely fine. This is perfectly fine, perfectly normal. If just about every advert that we see on the television shows Negroes with white women, displays of affection like this in public, we're told that that's perfectly fine as well. If women got married at a young age and stuck with a man, they would always have a chaperone and none of them would ever get raped or sexually assaulted or have any of these things, these terrible things that ruin their lives. None of these things would be happening if people still followed traditions and got married young. When she got up to leave, Wachira grabbed her bottom before she could get away. The victim was in court to hear the sentence. She read a statement which said the incident had had a massive impact on her life. "I was assaulted on public transport in daylight hours," she said. And this is something that's just going to be happening more and more and more often. Now the country gets more and more diverse, public transport is going to become more and more dangerous for women until it becomes like America and no white people travel on the public transport at all because they can't. It's not just the stabbings that are happening in London and the muggings, it's all the sexual assaults that women are having to put up with. She said, "This has been distressing for me. I didn't leave my house for a week as I was too scared to walk around in case he was there or it would happen again. I lost all my confidence and moved to another town. I felt moving away and quitting my job was the only option for me." I believe her. She will have lost all her confidence. She won't want to talk to anybody that looks like they're lost now. She won't want to talk to strangers. And in a white society, you should be free and safe to talk to anybody, anybody that's there, because they're part of your family. This is the thing. Your race is your family. Your nation is your family. You can feel safe around your family. You're not going to feel safe around people from the other side of the world who don't even have a different word for woman, wife, or child. It's all the same word because to them it all has the same function in life. Wachira said he came to the UK in 2017 to study, but had not been able to afford the fees. He told police that his actions had been misinterpreted and that he had done nothing wrong. If he came to the UK in 2017, what's he doing still here if he couldn't afford the fees? But in court, he said he was deeply sorry for what had happened and felt ashamed. He had been drinking and would not do it again. He admitted sexual assault. The defendant has no previous convictions. He was served deportation documents the day after the incident, but had lodged an asylum claim. He said because of the political situation in Kenya, he would be killed if sent back. So what? That's not our problem, is it? That's Kenya's problem. If Kenya can't create a civilized society, then why on earth would we think these people, if they come over to Britain, are going to be some kind of bring some kind of positive value to our society? All they're going to do is turn our society into the same situation that Kenya's in. He shouldn't even be here. He should have been sent back months ago. Judge Evans said his deportation was a matter for the government, but it was almost inevitable he would be sent back to Kenya because he had overstayed his visa. Well, the judge may say that, but we know better, don't we? We know that they end up staying here for years because they end up putting in an asylum claim. And if the asylum claim gets rejected, they still get given their money, only about £2 a week less, and then they lodge an appeal. And the appeals process can take years, and it costs thousands of pounds. And if they lose their appeal, they just disappear into the population. Now that they've actually got their hands on this guy, they should just deport him straight away. Any of these foreigners that carry out crimes in our country should be deported straight away. Why waste the money on investing in prison sentences and rehabilitation? And as I said at the beginning of this, 75% of all knife crime in London is being carried out by foreigners that arrived here in the last 50 years. The way to stop the knife crime and the way to stop the sexual assaults is to remove the people that are doing them. It's so simple. And life would be so much safer and better for everyone if we were to do that. Maybe some people will say, well, we can't send them back because their countries are dangerous. Well, how about we segregate them then? How about we segregate them all to one part of the country, let them police themselves, let them judge themselves, let them teach themselves, and make it so that they can't come into the rest of the country unless they have a pass, unless they have some kind of pass that says that they haven't committed crimes and they're not going to commit crimes and they're allowed in the white areas. That's the way to deal with this. That would do away with 75% of all crime, and they wouldn't be suffering racism then. They couldn't complain of racism because they'd be living in their own areas, making their own decisions, being policed by their own people. And it would benefit everybody to be doing that. So why isn't anybody suggesting it? Okay, we've gone a little bit over time here. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.